Hey guys, thanks for tuning into the Flight Test Podcast. Today's podcast is with Bert Rutan, who's the famous airplane designer and test pilot. We had an awesome discussion with him today, and I think you guys will really enjoy it. Unfortunately, the podcast got a little bit cut off before we were able to get things rolling. And so before the podcast begins here, we talked about Rutan RC, which is Bert's new project along with a couple of other people, where he is bringing his full-scale projects to life in RC form so everyone else can enjoy them too. If you support the Kickstarter like we did, you'll receive the White Knight, and you'll also receive Spaceship One, which Rutan won the X Prize for. And I just think it's an awesome Kickstarter. Please check it out by clicking the link below or by going to flighttest.com/podcasts. Now, where we picked up in the podcast here, we were talking about the Ski Gull, which is Bert Rutan's newest project that he's spending about 12 to 14 hours a day working on. He's been working on it with a small team for about the past 14 months, and they're going to be hopefully showcasing it at Oshkosh this July. And so I really hope you guys enjoy this podcast as much as we enjoyed doing it. And now, Bert Rutan.
Now, what I'm doing is very different. Are you an airplane pilot, full-scale airplane pilot?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, Peter next to me here, he's a private. I've been flying since I was about seven. And then your father, Austin, he's a full-scale pilot as well, too. So we're all pretty immersed in full-scale.
Very good. Well, let me explain to you something that makes absolutely no sense.
I love this.
Almost always, a land plane, you know, designed to land on runway, almost always it lands on a smooth runway. Okay? And the pilot has real good visual cues for touchdowns. So if he's halfway skillful, he can really grease it on and land at a low rate of sink.
Sure.
Okay? Now, a land plane has a stroke in its landing gear of, 5 to 8 inches is kind of the stroke that it has to absorb energy. You get another inch by squashing the tire, but you have that amount of shock absorption to absorb the rate of sink, but you land on a smooth runway. Okay, you got that picture?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
A seaplane has no shock absorption at all, except for one that was done in the 50s. It was called the Sea Dart.
Oh, I was going to ask you about that.
Are you familiar with the Sea Dart?
Yep.
I can. That's the only one I can find that has real shock absorption. And the Sea Dart could go out in the open ocean and land in large swells. And, you know, it could land in things that would destroy a normal seaplane.
Mm-hmm.
However, now a seaplane rarely lands on a smooth runway. In fact, if his runway is smooth, the pilot can't see the surface, so he doesn't know where to flare. He just sets up 100 foot a minute or so and waits for it to touch the water. So if he has a smooth surface, he has to make a hard landing. And if he has a rugged surface, he has to take the beating of the hull because he has no shock absorption. So all that seems backwards, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever landed on water?
I have not.
No.
Mm-hmm.
You know, any airplane can land on water once. But when you have your first ride or your first flight and you land on water, two things will happen. You look up and it doesn't look like, you know, just little ripples and whatever, but you'll be shocked at how much it beats you up. It'll go bam, bam, bam. You know, even just little 3 or 4 inch ripples in the water, it beats up on the airplane. And another thing you'll do is when you come off the step and slow down and now you're floating and you've just done your first water landing, you will giggle. Because it's just so neat to land on water. I don't care how many hours you've got flying, when you land on water the first time, you giggle. I'm not joking. So anyway, what I've got is is an airplane with about 4 or 5 times the shock absorption stroke as a land plane instead of zero. I've got like 28 inches.
Wow, wow. Mm-hmm.
Now, if you had a land plane with 28 inches of stroke, it wouldn't hammer when you make a hard landing. It would kind of be real spongy, and it would softly go down into the ground and come back up. You know what I'm saying? It'll be kind of a saggy, soft, real soft landing gear.
Sure.
You got that kind of picture?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, now if you take that kind of landing gear and you put it on water, you're going to be slapping the skis on top of these waves initially, but putting very little load back into the airframe. So what I have is carbon fiber skis that go down real steep angles, like 37 degrees. And they're real long, about 60 inches long or more. So when the tips of those hit the water, it doesn't take much load for them to initially bend. And then it takes more and more the deeper you go into the water. So bottom line, you'll hear them slapping on the water, but you won't feel that bam, bam, bam onto the airframe.
Got it.
Mm-hmm.
And having that much shock absorption and having a stall speed of only 40 knots, I believe I'll be able to land on large ocean crests. And seaplanes can't do that.
Yeah.
I also believe, unless the surf is really up, that I'll be able to put it on any beach. And if you can fly somewhere and land out in the ocean because your airplane is totally seawater compatible, it'll be the first seaplane that's really totally seawater compatible. Every seaplane that has any aluminum in it has to get a real wash job if it goes into salt water.
Sure, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And even then, it disappears over time. But anyway, we're all titanium or composite, so we're totally compatible with seawater. Anything that's not compatible, like the engine or the propeller, is a line replaceable unit. In other words, you can walk up to it with a toolbox and swap it out.
Got it.
Wow.
All the flight controls, the rudder pedals, the stick, the throttle, the push rods, the rod ends are all composite or plastic. So it's a real unusual structure, not just the materials, but the structure is very unusual.
Is this a
bottom line? I've got a real high aspect ratio and long wings, which is different from a seaplane. A seaplane usually has short wings. You can watch them struggling to get off the water. They put the nose way up and trying to get up on the step, and then they struggle to get off. Well, I have my induce drag so low that the backside of the power curve is below the stall speed. So you can't get on the backside. And you don't need a high attitude to get all the lift out of the wing because you have real long wings. It's like a motor glider. And when you accelerate to only about, say at gross weight, 16 knots, or at lighter weights, 12 or 13 knots, you reach up and you turn a valve and you've got a pneumatic system that raises you up out of the water and you're water skiing now.
It's amazing.
And, you know, when you water ski, you can do big jumps because you can flex your knees when you hit. And people do really high sink rate stuff, and it works just fine. But a seaplane hitting the water at the same rate of sink as a guy who did a jump in a water while he's skiing, water skiing, it'll wreck the airplane.
Yep.
So bottom line, we got a lot of stroke, very soft landing gear. And the neat thing about it is you can't lose your airplane because you happen to put the gear down to land on water, because you usually put the gear down to land on water.
Sure.
Okay. The gear is skis. Now, those skis are just right for landing on grass or snow or ice or dirt or rough fields. In fact, they'll land on on runways because sticking down below the skis in four places per ski is a wheel, and it sticks down only 0.8 inches, so it doesn't hurt the hydrodynamic drag very much. Mm-hmm. But it allows you to go ahead and land on concrete runways.
Probably be a very soft landing as well, mm-hmm. too.
Yeah. If you grease it on, you're going to just slowly, as you lose weight off the wing, you'll drop another 2 or 3 feet.
That's amazing.
Now, to have that, also, I've selected the most efficient aircraft engine there is for general aviation. And with these long wings with low induced drag, I can operate off of water, even several hundred pounds over gross. So I should have range to take off from Hawaii and fly to Idaho.
That's wow. Amazing.
That's such a long, long duration.
What cruise speed are you hoping for with this?
Well, the maximum cruise speed is turbocharged. So if you go up to 18 to 24,000 and run your maximum cruise power setting, you know, about 75, 78% power, it'll go about 180 knots.
Oh, wow.
That's really respectable.
The thing that's really different, though, is when you're wanting to have a lot of range or endurance, your power required to fly is only about 16 or 17% power if you slow way down. But long range, you're going to run about 25% power, whereas you go like 40 to 65% in a normal land plane, because keep in mind you don't pick up much induced drag as you slow down. Bottom line, that trip from Hawaii is a long trip. But you can get more than 60 miles per gallon.
That's incredible. And when are you hoping to have this become a reality for you?
What's that?
When are you hoping to complete your project?
Oh, my plan is to get it finished and flying within the next 6 weeks.
Oh, my goodness.
6 weeks? Wow.
And to fly it and to fly it nonstop to the Oshkosh Air Show.
Huh.
And unveil it this year at Oshkosh in late July.
I think we need to go to Oshkosh.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it just got settled.
I've been working on it for about 14 months.
That's amazing. Absolutely amazing. And normally with what you're talking about with seaplane compatible or where it can land in salt water, most of the time when planes take off and land, the open ocean is not an option for them. That's only if you have an emergency, correct?
Yeah.
Where this one
you're
here.
You're familiar with the Catalina?
One of my dad's favorite planes, PBY Catalina.
The PBY?
Yes.
If you get a logbook for a PBY, you might find that it has, 20,000 or even 30, 40,000 hours. And you'd be shocked to find how few ocean landings it makes.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Because it's such a big corrosion problem that they rarely, only in an emergency when they landed in salt water.
Only when they would do rescues, right? When they would put it down and have the people.
And only when they had an opportunity to wash it with fresh water.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
If you land in salt water with a normal seaplane, you want to take off quickly, go up and land on a freshwater lake and put your gear down and taxi around and really wash the salt off of it.
It's pretty fascinating. Mm-hmm. So the safety aspect on yours is going to be very good. The plane won't be compromised if you do have to put it down in the open ocean for any reason.
Oh, safety.
Yeah.
I haven't told you the best part. this is a low wing loading, large wing airplane. To get the stall speed so I could get short takeoff and landing performance. I don't want to have to use more than 400 feet for any kind of surface.
Oh, wow.
Because it's low wing loading and real high aspect ratio, it's a much better glider than anybody else's seaplane. You know, for example, they after they're climbed out, they're, if they lose the engine, they pretty much look right under them as to where they can land. You know, this with an LRD of 24 or so instead of 6 or 9, you can glide a lot further, the engine out to places. But anyway, the airplane is going to be susceptible to winds more than a normal seaplane when you're docking. You know, a seaplane pilot, he kind of plans it ahead as far as his speed and direction, and he shuts the engine off and lets, and he jumps out on the floats with a paddle and a rope and a prayer. and he tries to, you know, get the airplane up to the dock without being able to do any fine tuning. Well, what I have on this airplane is hybrid electric propellers. When I say hybrid, they're separate from the gas engine prop. There are two model airplane engines. They're hackers with 13 horsepower.
Nice.
You RC guys are probably familiar with that.
Yes, it's
German made.
Are they the 800s?
It's an engine that's, it's a motor of about 4.5 or inches in diameter. Puts out about 12 horsepower maximum. And at around 6,000 RPM.
Yeah, I think I know what those motors are. I may have looked at those. I think they're the A100s.
If you see a guy with a 25% scale or 40% scale aerobatic airplane that he hovers, if it's electric, it has these kind of motors. They're outrunners.
Yeah.
Okay.
We live in a world full of those things.
Yeah, they're really cool. And bottom line, I have enough energy. First of all, the airplane will have bullets coming out of the leading edge, one on the right wing, one on the left wing. The bullet's 5 inches in diameter and about 22 inches long with a spinner on the front of it. The propellers are folded so they don't have drag when you're cruising. But if you fire them up, you can go forward thrust on the right and turn it backwards for aft thrust on the left, and you can turn around in a spot.
You got a mechanical advantage, huh?
Or you can back up, or you can go forward, or you have a lot of maneuver. In fact, the joystick to control the docking motors looks identical to the old radio-controlled transmitters where guys had rudder on the right hand, and you twist the knob.
Yep, single stick.
I had one of those back in the 70s, I think it was.
Probably a craft radio, right?
Throttle only on the left thumb, but the right, you had rudder, aileron, and elevator all on one stick, and you'd twist the top of it. So anyway, I have a controller like that. So you could sit in the cockpit then and control it right up to a nice landing on the dock or the beach.
That's amazing. That's awesome.
Now, those little motors do a couple other things that are pretty cool. As you know, you can get about 70 pounds or 80 pounds of thrust out of one of those. So when you're loaded overweight for the Hawaii leg, you turn them on and run them for about 10 or 12 seconds to get you up on the skis and to help you with your heavyweight takeoff. But the thing I started talking about was safety with these things. The neat thing about it is all other seaplanes, if they take off out of a lake and they stagger out over the trees, if they lose the engines, they can't even turn. They're going to crash into the trees. Well, the Ski Gull, these model airplane propellers, can fly the airplane and even climb it.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
So I can climb the airplane for about 2.5 minutes on the batteries or fly it level for about 5 minutes.
Wow.
So if you lose an engine taking off over the trees at a high altitude lake somewhere, you just mash your emergency power with your thumb on your throttle and up comes the model airplane propellers, and you can climb to downwind and land into the wind on the lake you just took off on.
That's amazing, my friend.
That's awesome.
Or you can fly about 8 miles to find a better place to land if you've lost your engine. Mm-hmm.
Now, goofy question. When motors oftentimes freewheel, they can generate a current. Will you be using these motors to charge batteries while in flight or anything like that?
The Rotax engine has two different buses and two different alternators built right into the engine.
Oh, okay, nice.
But I'm going to add a third one because I want to have a higher voltage to charge the docking motors. Mm-hmm. So I'll actually have three buses on the airplane instead of two. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you can charge the docking motors either by just flying with the alternator off the Rotax, off your normal engine. And you have to fly for about 20 minutes to charge the docking motors if you've used a lot of them for takeoff, for example. Mm-hmm. Or if you you can also, if you're camped out somewhere, you can put out a 2-meter solar panel and in 4 or 5 days you've charged it just off the sun.
Amazing.
That's awesome.
I got a question too. Do you know what the capacity of the battery is that you're running for that?
Well, it's not the model airplane batteries that you guys use. Mm-hmm. The cell is actually the identical cell that's in a Tesla or in a Prius. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Got it.
It's a lithium iron, not lithium ion, so it doesn't burn and flash off and catch mm-hmm. fire. Although, it does have a firewall, but it's lithium iron, same one that we use for the flying car, the bipod, which mm-hmm. is my last airplane that I did back in 2011.
Amazing.
The battery system and the controllers and the motor and the folding prop are all custom developed for the Ski Gull. Mm-hmm. It monitors each cell, just like the Tesla does, and makes it so that you can't improperly charge each cell. It monitors the current and the temperature of every cell. And I think there's, 60. I think it has about 78 cells.
Mm. Okay.
Amazing.
And they're about the size of a D cell.
Gotcha.
So with this design, your main desire, from what I understand, is to fly you and your wonderful wife to Hawaii. Is that correct?
Well, I'm not that big on Hawaii. Everybody else goes there. The reason I said Hawaii is that if you can go across the lake from Hawaii to California, then you can go everywhere else in the world because yep. that's the longest overwater leg.
Yep.
Very cool.
That's the perfect visualization.
Yeah. No, Hawaii is not interesting because all the tourists go there. I want to use this for exploration. Mm-hmm. Exploration is finding something that somebody doesn't know about.
Absolutely.
And you can't plan an exploration trip because if you know where you're going, you know that it's not something to explore. So you need something to randomly drive you in directions. And then you talk to the locals and then gin down from there. For example, in your hometown, if somebody comes from a long ways away, you don't take him to the place the tourists go. You take him to some cool places that only locals know about, right? Mm-hmm. So with Word Lens and other translation things on your iPhone, you can talk to anybody in the world. And I'm going to be driven around the world by the large high-pressure systems. When I say driven, I'll stay in the middle of these large high-pressure systems, and that way I'll avoid the severe weather.
Amazing.
Now, do you anticipate there will only be one Ski Gull, or do you think this is something that will ever be produced on a large or small scale?
I did 46 airplanes in my career, and 5 of them were ones that I sold plans for so that other people could build them.
Sure.
And every time I did one, I quickly went out and did the next one, and I didn't get a chance to enjoy it myself. But I'm 72 years old now, so I'm not gonna have a new business to sell plans and do builder support. I stopped selling plans in 1985 and did builder support for 25 years after that.
Fair enough.
So I can't start that again. No, someone else will likely do that if the airplane flies properly. That's what flight test is all about, to see if all this horse I've been telling you is true.
Sure.
Because I don't know if it's true until you test it.
That brings up a question.
I have been sending all of my tooling to a fella in Lewiston, Idaho, who his job is repairing and building composite home builds. And he'd be a one to build components if somebody wants to set up a kit. I don't want to do an LSA because you're limited performance-wise to something that's not anywhere close to a ski goal.
Sure.
Gotcha. Gotcha. I've been dying to ask you, with your process of designing, a lot of the computers and the programs used today didn't exist back when you were doing this. What was your process from dreaming up an idea to designing it, to creating it, to testing it? What was the flow of that?
Well, you're right. It was pencils, French curves, and slide rules for all the home builds that I did. I did some computer design on my last home built that was done well after RAF stopped selling plans, so the Boomerang. I did a CAD and a computer flight test data reduction and you know, lofting, I say everything. But the Long Easy, for example, you were talking about a hand calculator and a slide rule. And wow. Sharpen a pencil often.
Amazing.
And of course, with no internet, it's really hard to do builder support.
Sure, yep. Mm-hmm.
Can imagine. So when you designed this, was it a gut feeling that this looks right? Because I mean, a lot of people I've talked to that design planes, it's just, I looked at it and it looks right to me. Is that kind of the mentality you went by? Or, you know, if it feels right and from your previous experience that you built on that? Or what tools, what books?
Well, you know, everybody builds on things that they've seen. The thing that's different here is that if in your career you've done 46 different new types, you tend to build on your old stuff. Whereas almost every other airplane out there builds on something similar, and they make improvements to a conventional design. But I did a lot of work in tweaking an airplane during flight test. In other words, a lot of these airplanes didn't fly very well on first flight, but I'd stick with it and make modifications until it had the kind of flying qualities that were acceptable.
Wow.
That sounds like a lot of what we go through.
A lot of that.
Amazing.
This one, I don't know. It's I certainly hope that other people can build a ski goal. It will be, imagine something you can just put down anywhere. You know, if you fly over and you see a farmer that has a tractor, he probably has gas. This doesn't use aviation fuel. It uses car gas.
Sure, yep.
Which is boat gas, except it has highway taxes.
Exactly.
And you know, if you've got a lake with some boats on it or a farmer or a beach anywhere, you're going to have fuel nearby. Now, we're going to have these backpacks that the cross-country dirt bike racers use. Are you familiar with those?
No,
not particularly, no.
They're just like, it looks like a lunch backpack, but it has bladders in them, and they carry their extra fuel right there on their back. So if you put it on a beach somewhere, or if you're out in the middle of nowhere and you got to walk 5 miles to a service station, you fill each other up, and you can walk back to the airplane with 400 miles worth of fuel.
You really built this for exploring, that's for sure.
Yeah, or if you make three trips, you can walk back to the airplane with 1,000 miles of fuel.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like this thing is built for adventure.
Well, that's what it's all about, you know, and it's unique from the standpoint it'll go into, I think, you know, almost any little nook and cranny. For example, you can go up. The guys who do the extreme skiing that you only see on YouTube because they went up there on helicopters and they're dodging rocks as they're going straight down. There's a place that does that only 260 miles north of where I live here in North Idaho. And I figure I can just get my airplane in the lake in front of me here. I'm about 300 yards from a big, beautiful lake. Fly up there, land, and watch them do that. And then jump over the cliff with them. You know, you fall only about two airplane lengths and you can pull out. So it's not all that dangerous.
Sure.
And be home for dinner. Another thing, you can see the entire Amazon. You know, you just got to get boat gas and car gas occasionally. Bottom line, I hope to do a lot of exploration without ever going to an airport.
That's amazing.
The Greek islands, the tourists only go to a few of them. I don't know, 10 or a dozen, something like that. But there's 4,500 Greek islands.
That's amazing. It's a lot of islands.
And you're going to see the ones that nobody sees.
So with it being turbocharged and S2OL, you know, high altitude lakes, it's likely we're going to be able to do almost where you can go in a helicopter, except you can fly somewhere.
What's your wingspan going to be on this?
44 feet.
Oh, 44 feet.
Wow.
That's not as big as I thought it was going to be.
Well, this is a tiny airplane. It folds up and goes in a single car garage.
Oh, wow.
I have to remove 6-foot wing panels after the wings folded to put it in the garage, but it fits nicely in a single car garage.
And your early days starting out, I remember seeing Varies as they're being built. You use a lot of very common approachable materials back then, didn't you?
Well, I built the my first composite airplane, the proof of concept, very easy. It was not kitted, but it was the first proof of concept, we called it, you know, research. I built that using 181 cloth, and then I discovered that the European sailplane factories use a cloth that's considerably easier to do layups. And I ended up talking Aircraft Spruce into ordering $100,000 of that so that Hexsail could weave it in this country.
Oh, wow.
But some of the composite materials that are used on fiberglass or carbon fiber airplanes in this country, the supply line for a lot of this stuff wasn't there when I did the Very Easy back in the mid-70s. I had to bring it in.
So now the materials you're using now, are they more carbon fibers and are they greatly different than what you were using back then?
I still do mostly contact layups rather than vacuum bagging. I didn't do any vacuum bagging in the old days. And I didn't use any carbon fiber then. But there is a lot of moldless construction on the Ski Gull where you do something that I pioneered for manned airplanes, but the model airplane guys had done it for a couple of decades, and that is use a hot wire to cut foam cores.
And then lay the glass over top of the foam cores and then eat out the foam cores. Is that how it works?
No, you leave them there.
Leave it in there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you want flotation, and you need buckling stiffness for the skins.
Now, with the ski goal, is this more like a standard?
The wings, for example, are full core, 2-pound foam. So the rib is goes from the root to the tip.
That's pretty amazing.
The airplane could be 10 times its weight and it still wouldn't sink, even if it's flooded.
Well, it's a great emergency in the ocean. Mm-hmm. Oh, now I had another question too. With the design, is it more of a standard configuration? Because I know you're famous for canards and stuff like that. Is it going to be canard or anything exotic?
Oh, the configuration of Ski Gull?
Yes.
I generally don't show the configuration before it's flight tested.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I think if you look at my airplanes, you'll find that true on most of them. You can save the embarrassment of doing it wrong. If it doesn't fly well, then you never show it to them.
Very practical. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Actually, the reason is when someone doesn't know what an airplane looks like before you unveil it, it's always a more fun rollout.
Yeah.
Definitely true.
Definitely keeps the stress down, too. You don't have people trying to re-guide you halfway through the project, huh?
I've got a lot of people helping me now, probably 6-7 people. So I've been pretty good at security. There aren't any pictures of this airplane on the Internet or any graph, anything. Mm-hmm. So it's possible that I'll fly it nonstop and arrive at Oshkosh without anybody knowing what it looks like.
That's awesome.
We really need to get the Oshkosh.
Yeah,
year.
We
and that'll always be fun. Now, again, I'm probably only 50-50 that I'll get it done and that the flight test will be supportive of a safe flight to Oshkosh only a handful of weeks after it starts to fly.
Sure.
Yeah, roughly,
no promise.
Roughly how many hours do you need to put on an airframe before you deem it safe and capable of flying distances?
Well, FAA says you're going to have 40 before you leave your test area.
Got it.
Very good.
Well, Bert, we really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. We have a lot of young people and aspiring aircraft designers in our audience. Is there any resources that you would recommend to somebody that's also aspiring to design your aircraft, even on a small scale like RC?
Resources? What do you mean?
Just like, how would you recommend somebody getting started?
Resources.
Yep.
Yeah, like materials, books. Is there anything that's really guided you and helped you learn?
That was so long ago, I forgot. No, there's certainly a lot better design tools now. They don't necessarily help you, though, create something new. The design tools allow you to analyze something that you've already designed, but they're generally not useful for inventing new things.
Sure.
So I think the only thing I would tell people, if they want to have as much fun as I had, is go out and try some stuff, even some stuff that even you think will not work. And it's not a big deal if it doesn't work, but if it does and it provides better safety or performance, then it is a lot more fun than the normal first flight on something that's copied from something that was known to work.
That's very good advice. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's very good. Well, Bert, we really want to thank you for taking the time to join us, and we hope you get your Ski Gull done in time for Oshkosh, and who knows, maybe we'll see you there.
Okay, yep. Very good.
Wonderful.
All right, thank you, Bert.
Hey, thank you, sir.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I was going to be like, will you adopt me?
That was really, really cool. Well, I think that, we're all bigger fans of Bert than we would have been otherwise. yeah, that was absolutely awesome.
That was cool. He was a very neat fella, very approachable.
Yeah.
And maybe he is open for adoption.
Yeah, I'd love to see this plane. It sounds amazing.
We have some really exciting episodes.
I mean, the plane is a two-seater, so maybe he'd be willing to take you on one of his adventures.
I think the whole time the thing was he was avoiding saying is build something, jump in it, and try to see if it'll fly. which blows my mind. But hearing the passion that he, I would love to have heard him back with the other previous designs that he's done, because describing this, he has a very clear thing. And I think the plane is nothing more than a tool to do a bigger passion, which is explore.
Yeah.
I never would have dreamed that would have been the case.
Well, actually, it kind of sounds like his passion has shifted a little bit from, you know, design and seeing other people flying as designs to basically flying or designing the perfect plane that he wants to have.
Yeah.
And then using that to basically what he called his his Walter Mitty.
Yeah.
He wants to go on his Walter Mitty adventure. And I think that's absolutely awesome.
That's going to be a crazier story probably than the development.
Yeah.
Can you guys believe how short of a time span from dreaming this up to starting it to when he intends to finish it?
He said 14 months,
that's
right?
Crazy.
14 months.
I feel embarrassed now. My airplane build, like, oh, I thought I was building kind of quickly.
Well, and I was expecting him to say maybe like another year's worth of work or something like that. He's like, yeah, I'm hoping to have it done in the next 6 weeks.
I'm that, like, blows my mind.
What?
It's like part of us wants to be like, okay, then you got to stop talking to us. Go back. You know?
You don't have a moment to spare, Bert.
Did any of us have the wisdom to say, ask him what he was laying up? What component he was laying?
No. Yeah. That
call him back.
Yeah. Okay. I got his number
was
now.
Was it the wing? Was it the tail? Was it? That's crazy. Absolutely crazy.
Well, guys, I hope you enjoyed that as much as we did. He was a great, great interviewer.
I like him.
He didn't take any work whatsoever to tease information out of him. So, well, we're going to do another segment with the gentleman from Rattan RC.
Yes.
And to fill you guys in a little bit more on that. And so stay tuned for that. All right. Thanks, guys.
See you next time.